boy, I tell you what, the envy, an envious part of his job is today. Mike Zeisberger is traveling around with the Stanley Cup, that big silver mug. And Vince Dunn has it tomorrow. Jordan Binnington, the St. Louis Blues, had it today. And he was spending some time with Jordan Binnington. How are you, Mike?
I'm great. And by the way, guys, are you really talking about teams that are struggling for wins and struggling for attendance? First word, Argos. Last word, Toronto.
That is true. Although we've been up and down every part of that topic, and you know, I know we did in Toronto as well. They won a great cup and didn't move the needle.
Yeah. Well, how about the way they lost that game last week?
Well, the walk off Rouge.
that's terrific.
That's got to be the worst way to lose in all of sports.
Just when you thought you saw everything that you could ever see, you saw that.
You were around when they signed Rocket and away from the National Football League,
yeah.
And everyone's going crazy. I mean, it seems like it was a billion years ago.
Yeah, it does. We'll move on to hockey shortly, but yeah, my first year in the Argos was Rocket's second year, and even then, one of the most bizarre things that I saw then, just a quick story, is that we were at our Argo practice one day, Rocket's second year. Obviously, he had played for Notre Dame and all the pomp and pageantry and 80,000 people plus. And then he's having a practice with the Argos at Centennial Park, which is a park near the airport in Toronto. And they had to stop practice because there's a big hill right there and a guy in a hang glider, was landing in the middle of the field during their practice. And you're just looking at this going, I bet you didn't see this in Notre Dame.
Sure enough, Mike Zeisberger joins us, NHL.com. So, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't quite have your timetable. You're hanging out. You're following Jordan Binnington a little bit today with the Stanley Cup, true?
Yeah, Binnington today, and tomorrow I'm going up to Lindsay, which for people that aren't familiar with that, is about an hour and a half north of Toronto for Vince Dunn. And you were exactly right when you let off with it is one of the coolest parts of my job, because as great as the other trophies are in the other sports, I mean, I think one of the neatest things about the Stanley Cup is that the guys get to keep it for a day. And when you see the look on their on the faces of their families, and you see the looks, like today they had like a mini parade for Jordan through a park in Richmond Hill, which is just north of Toronto, and it was just lined with kids holding these blue and yellow balloons, and you know, they're shaking his hand and touching the cup, and it brings you back to the grassroots of the game. And one, you know, you look at the looks on the faces of these kids. And you're not talking about RFAs and holdouts and salary arbitration. You're remembering what it was like when that cup was something that we all dreamed about as kids. And as a footnote, the other thing that's great about the cup, guys, other than the Grey Cup, which of the major sports can you drink out of the trophy? I mean, it drives me crazy. I mean, you know, you can't with the Lombardi Trophy. You can't with the O'Brien Trophy. You can't with that spiked World Series trophy. I mean, shouldn't you be able to drink out of a trophy?
Yeah, George Costanza had it right dragging that thing around Steinbrenner's parking lot, I'll tell you that. The Jordan Binnington conversation specifically, Mike, it's a really interesting one, because there's a lot of guys that win the Stanley Cup that can say the cliche of, oh, like, wow, this is an unexpected surprise, or I have no words, or I never thought it would happen. The Jordan Binnington one and the role he played is truly one of the more unlikely ones in the history of this trophy.
Yeah, you know what? It really is. And yet, you talk to some of the guys every year for the last 3 or 4 years, Jordan goes to something in August called the BioSteel Camp with a lot of other NHLers take part in. And I know Tyler Seguin, for one, takes part in it, and he has said on numerous occasions that, you know what, he didn't understand, you know, how this guy hadn't left his footprint in the NHL yet, especially after last summer. He said this kid, even in a scrimmage, laid it out all out on the line. So it's kind of ironic that Binnington was one of the reasons that Sagan's Dallas Stars were eliminated in the second round. But, yeah, this is a kid. I mean, listen, we're talking about a guy that made his first NHL start on January 7th, I should say. And yesterday he celebrated his 26th birthday. So, you know, he's already into the meat of his career. And I think it's a great story. And he told a lot of the kids yesterday or today at the parade, you know what? If you think you can do it and you have self-confidence, then you just don't give up. You keep stepping on the gas pedal. And when you get knocked down, you get back up and get in there again. And you know what? I mean, this is a guy that stepped in. His record was something like 27-5 during the regular season. In the playoffs, he's the first rookie goaltender ever to have 16 victories. So, you know, even Hollywood couldn't have scripted something like this. But, you know, you get the impression in Jordan Binnington's mind that this was never as far-fetched in between his ears as it may have been for a lot of other people.
And, Mike, you talk about seeing him with the cup today and forgetting about things like restricted free agency and arbitration. But, you know, he's going to have to turn back his focus to that side of things here pretty quick. 8 days away from his arbitration hearing, if it gets to that. And it's one of the more interesting ones in recent years, just because we don't really have a precedent for what Jordan Binnington did this year. Do you have any idea where this contract could come in at?
No, I don't. I'm not sure. I know Doug Armstrong. I think this is going to be the type of thing where you know, it's going to get done. I think by the time all is said and done, by the time we get through the next week and a half, I've heard estimates from anywhere between 4 and 6. I do know this. I mean, you know, we can talk about the one and done goalies. We all remember from Washington a while back, Jim Carrey, net detective, you know, with the Washington Capitals. There's been a few other, Mike Moffitt with the Bruins way back when.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the difference being that this guy won or helped win a Stanley Cup. And to me, I mean, he pretty well put his name on the dotted line. In game 7, he gave up that kind of a questionable goal in game 6, but that game 7 that he put in the Stanley Cup final, Boston Bruins, one of the rowdiest buildings you'll ever want to see. And in that first period, I still remember that Dominic Hasek like save he made, kind of the on the belly snow angel. And you know what? I mean, I think he pretty much wrote his ticket there. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see what he gets. But let's face it, Doug Armstrong doesn't have a lot of options here, so I think this will be pretty neat and tidy. Now, unlike Mitch Marner, by the way, which you haven't asked me about, and you know what? Thank you for allowing me that 3 minutes of a pause before I get asked about Mitch Marner.
Yeah, the Columbus Blue Jackets, the latest team in the rumor mill to seriously be kicking around an offer sheet. The Binnington thing, you're right. I mean, Doug Armstrong doesn't have a lot of choice here, but what stones it would take for an organization to say, hey, we appreciate what you've done, but we can't overextend ourselves for a guy that still has half a season under his belt. Like, you can't forget that by signing him to a deal, and they probably already have done this, but collectively as an organization, they are saying we were incredibly wrong, and like to a man, we didn't think this guy could play, and now we're turning around and signing him to a multi-year deal. You're right, he wouldn't be the first goalie, and the first goalie without an extensive pedigree to throw together a few good months.
Yeah, no. You're absolutely right. The bottom line is he's one of the only ones that, you know, finished off what he started. The only other one I can think of is Ken Dryden back in 1971, where he played, I think it was 6 regular season games, and then led the Bruins to a Stanley Cup, the Montreal Canadiens to a Stanley Cup, including a big win over the Big Bad Bruins in the first round. Patrick Waugh won one in his rookie year, but he played a lot more and earlier in the season. I mean, Jordan Binnington was kind of like they threw him in on January 7th against the Flyers and said, well, you know, nothing else is working. They were in last place in the league on January 3rd. So, you know, at that point, you're just trying anything. And he shut out the Flyers that night. And who knew from that game that that would be a foreshadow of things to come.
Before we let you go, and you're spending some time with the St. Louis Blues, as mentioned, and some of these guys celebrating with the Cup, do you think it's overblown, Mike? This team won the Stanley Cup, so how did they do it, and how do we emulate that? And the St. Louis Blues, for the they're a heavy team. And you look at a team, hey, say in Toronto, where Kyle Dubas has basically gone all in on, hey, we're small, and we're fast, and we're skilled, and we're going to outskill you until the end of time. They're even trading guys like Nazem Kadri. They've gone the other way. Is it overblown to look at St. Louis and try to do the copycat thing?
Well, here's what I would say to you. And I after the Leafs were eliminated, I covered the Blues for the last three rounds, so I got a pretty good idea or pulse of how they what was going on. I think, you know what, it is a copycat league, but there's a danger in that. For me, you have to play to the identity and the characteristics of your team. And here's what I mean by that, okay? When the Blues had trouble, okay, and we let's not forget, I mean, Winnipeg took them to six, then they went seven games against Dallas, six games in the third round against San Jose, and then seven rounds in the final. So, it wasn't like they were disposing of teams easily. When they got in trouble, they tried to do the fancy-dancy skill type of game, and they played too much of an east-west game instead of a north-south. And I think that, Craig Berube, to his credit, simplified it and made them understand that there's one way that we're going to be successful. You go north-south, you dump it in, and you know what? You just grind on the other team's top defenseman. I saw it against, Truba in the first round. We saw it against Klingberg in the second round. And they knocked, they finally wore Erik Karlsson right out of the series in the third round. So, that's the way that they were effective. That's the way their team was built. Doesn't mean it'll be successful for every other team. If you've got a base of skilled guys, don't ask them to do what they're not, what they're not good at. Find a way to accentuate what their positives are. And I think that the Blues did a great job of that. But I do think there's a danger if teams try to copycat that, because all of a sudden, you know what, in the market, maybe you're getting too much grit. Maybe you're overpaying for that aspect. And, so I do agree with you. I think there is a danger of being a copycat league at times.
He is Mike Zeisberger, NHL.com. We appreciate the time, as always. Enjoy your next day with the Cup. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, guys, and thanks for the hospitality to Vancouver at the draft. It was one of the best ones in years, and, of course, why wouldn't it be in Canada's most beautiful city?